Originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, this is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 138.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, three Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barajabort crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank all of you listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 206, and also to those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, next week we will be on our new channel, Sirius 219 XM 201. So be sure to tune in next week. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Just heard the news of Jose Flores at Parks. Such a sad story there. So please, folks, if you are able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight is the twin brother of a previous guest here on the show, actually, Jesse Campbell. He's also the treasurer of the Jockeys Guild, a big supporter of the PDJF, and in addition to winning races all over the country, including the Phoenix Gold Cup, he earned a business degree and also has worked as an insurance agent and currently works in real estate. So I can't wait to hear his story. With 716 wins and over $11 million in earnings, it is a pleasure to introduce jockey Joel Campbell. Joel, welcome to the show.
I say the pleasure is all mine, but before we start, I want to say two things. My condolences go out to Jose Flores and his family and friends. The jockey world is a small fraternity, and seeing that news yesterday and today, it's been all over, and my deepest sympathies go out to everyone involved there. So I do want to start with that. I know it's a little sad, but this is a small group of guys, and it's always heartbreaking. So, you know.
Such sad news. You're right, Joel. And yeah. I rode with Jose at Parks, and he was just the most well-respected guy in the room. Always looked up to him. Such a great person, and just so sad for him and his family. Yeah. And talk about a little bit your involvement with the PDJF. I know you do a lot of work with them.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I'm going to give a shameless plug here. I actually run or organize a 5K run at Arlington every year. You know, we've gotten a couple hundred runners. We're trying to get it to 300-400 runners, and all help's been from Arlington. June 16th at 6:30 after the races, they're going to do a Jockey's Appreciation Day and then do a 5K run after the races. That's the day before Father's Day. And you can sign up on It's Your Race or on the Arlington website. And we try and, you know, we raise, and every penny we go goes right to the PDJF. I try and do all the work we can. And I just think it's because of things like Jose Flores yesterday, and we've had two guys that are on that list at Arlington, Renee Douglas and Michael Strait, both got hurt there. And I just think, as a rider or anybody, this is just something you can't turn away from. So when it happens, it's not fun. It's part of the game that no one can ever get used to. But please, if you're in the Chicagoland area or like horse racing, sign up and come out to the races that day.
And tell our listeners again, Joel, how do they sign up?
You know what? There's two links. You can go to, in most 5Ks, to sign up to this link. It's itsyourrace.com, and you just put in PDJF 5K. It will come up. And then you can also just go into the Arlington Park website, and there is, on their calendar, you can buy it right through their ticket, right through their website, too. So
Great stuff.
So two different ways you can sign up for that, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's really so glad to hear that you're getting that rolling. I might have to go to Chicago and start working out so I can participate in that as well. That sounds great, Joel. And tell us, as a rider, how do you, knowing that every day you go out there, every race, we're getting followed by an ambulance, it's extremely dangerous. How do you cope with that when you're out there riding?
You know, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, and obviously me and Jess, we discuss this a lot because it's come dear to our hearts because it's our whole family in the industry. Two things. I think if you're thinking about that, it's time to stop riding. But I do think you have to acknowledge that it's always part of the game. And not just in the afternoon, the morning, too. Every time you go out there, there's that risk. You know, you're dealing with animals that are uncertain, and there's still that animal aspect about them. So I think you have to always have respect for it. But I think once you start thinking about that, maybe it's time to stop riding. Because I don't know if I've ever gone on the gate and thought about that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in your downtime and when you hear things like Jose yesterday, of course you think about it. But I've never had that fear in the back of my mind. But at the same time, you do have to respect that and know that that's part of what you got yourself into. So, you know, that is part of the game, unfortunately. And it's not no different being a car driver or a football player. Those guys know the risk they're taking. So you better be aware of that when you step in, but also have that respect for it. But again, if that's what you're thinking about, maybe I don't know if it's time to be riding still, because that should never be in the back of your mind when you go to the gate. You know, that's not doing your job. So I guess that's twofold, you know.
And you're in a little bit of a unique position. I've never experienced this, but your twin brother, Jesse, who, as I mentioned in the introduction, we've had him here on the show as well. And is it ever tough for you to watch him ride? And have you ever seen him involved in a spill? Is that tough?
Well, you know, that's tougher than myself going to the gate. You know, I mean, I have control over when I go to the gate. I never think about it. When I watch him ride, I don't miss a race. I mean, I'll be driving somewhere, and it's a Wednesday night, they're running at Woodbine, I'm watching. I don't care where I am, it's on, you know. And I think I'm more, I don't care where he finishes, of course, I'm rooting for him to win, but I just want to know he got around there. And I think that always comes first. And you can't control, like I said, it's out of my control, you know. And to watch him ride, you know, he's ridden 18,000 races or something, win a couple thousand, 2,000, 2,100 here. I don't think I've ever missed a race, you know, and I think that's part of it. I just want to know he got around there safe. I didn't care where he finishes. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm rooting for him to win every one. But I just want to know he got around there, you know. And I've watched him go down in so many spills, and there's nothing he can do. And believe me, I got every I'm calling the Woodbine jockey room before he even gets to the ambulance, you know. And I'm, you know, and Eddie King's one of their guild members. He runs the guild up in Canada. He's on my speed dial, you know.
Okay. Like,
so, yeah, I mean, it's nerve-wracking because I'm not there either. So, you know. Yeah, that part is hard. So I don't know what it's like for a mom or a wife to watch, but, you know, as a brother and a twin brother, as close as we are, it's hard. You know, that part is hard. So, and he's gone and down some horrific spills, you know, especially in the last couple of years at Woodbine. It has been tough, but Jesse's tough. He's walked away from all of them, so, you know.
You're tough as well. I know my mother, she watched a couple of spills live when I was riding, and she couldn't watch. She had to wait until she'd heard from me at the end of the day, and then she'd watch my replays. But she couldn't watch live.
Yeah, that's funny. It is tough on parents. My mom, you know, we were both riding, you know, night and day, full time. I'm in Iowa or Chicago. Jesse's in Canada. I don't know if she ever slept. You know, she didn't watch races because she was so worried all the time. So it's tough. That part is tough.
I can't imagine having two kids. Jockeys,
yeah, right.
Well, and you all seem pretty close then. So let's start talking about that now, Joel. How did you guys grow up and become involved in the sport? And were you both interested in becoming riders at the same time? Or who kind of took that initiative first?
You know, well, it's a family business. There's no doubt about it. And really, you know, my dad trains, obviously, and my dad rode. He got hurt really bad at Hot Springs, Arkansas. Before we were born, I think it was 75, 76. We were born in 77. And, I mean, he was in the hospital for 6 months. You know, he had 18 screws in one arm, and his leg is really a whole plate. Mm. They didn't want us to ride. But, of course, they wanted us to be around horses and grow up with it. So, our Aunt Patty taught us how to ride. And I mean, ride the correct way, hunter jumpers, barrel horses, anything you could think of. She's the one that taught us to ride. But we were racetrack kids and eventually, you know, gravitated that way and wanted to get the track. You know, I think two of my dad's cousins rode, you know, and then obviously he rode. So it was born into us, you know, and we had so much interest in it. And then, of course, Jesse started riding right out of high school. 17, he graduated semester early and started riding. And a lot of kids that way, even nowadays, because of weight, and that's what he had to do. I actually went a little different route. I went to 2 years of college and then started riding, and mainly because I could hold my weight. You know, I'm 5'1", Jesse's 5'6". I could get away with that a little. And I actually made a promise to my grandpa that I would finish college. So I went on with that, and I went to 2 years, and I did start riding at 19, 20. And then I actually had to go back to night school and finish because it was a promise I made, so that's what I did. So, and it was the right thing to do, too, by the way. But, you know, I believe in education, and that was a good thing for me. So, but that's how we got involved. You know, my dad's always carried 20, 25 head throughout the Chicago circuit, and they're in Hot Springs right now. But, you know, we were on horses since we were two, you know, and that's we grew up from it. So that's how we got involved.
So did you grow up traveling that Chicago Hot Springs circuit then?
No, you know what? Back when we moved here, my dad was leading trainer 3 years in a row with Thistle Downs. We moved to Chicago when we were eight, so it was 85. And I tell you what, the only reason I remember that, I've hit my head 20 times, remember too much, but it was, we were 8 years old, and that was the year Arlington burnt down, and we had the barn facing Arlington, so I'll never forget it. You know, the whole place was, you know, it was unbelievable. And that was in 1985, so that's when we moved up to Chicago. But that time of year, we went Chicago Hawthorne Sportsman's. We ran 6 days a week, and there was only like a four-week break in January. So really, you never had to leave here. Now, with the Chicago circuit's come down so much that now you're kind of forced to, you know, in the winter here, Hawthorne only runs like 12 days, mm-hmm. and then we go to Arlington. So most people are either now going to the fairgrounds, Tampa, or Oakland, and that's just the circuit Chicago's made. But at that time, you didn't have to go anywhere. You could just stay right here in Chicago and actually make a really good living, you know, and it was nice. You could have a family. Randy Meyer, Carlos Silva, Mark Guidry, they all just stayed here because it was so great, you know.
So how old were you when you galloped your first racehorse?
Oh, I mean, 16. I mean, as soon as you get our license on a racetrack, 16, you know, I mean, absolutely. Jesse actually worked at Hillendale, which is Mr. Dutchschwa's farm in Barrington, when he was 15 and a half, because he couldn't get on the track yet. And he started, as soon as 16, he was on the track and, you know, started riding at 17. But we both, I was in high school. We didn't even have junior, senior year, first and second period. I didn't go to class. I'd go to the track, gallop, come to school, and the school allowed us to do that because it was considered a job, you know. So, I mean, as soon as we could, we were at the track, you know. As soon as we get a license. But
were you an athlete in high school?
Yes, absolutely. So I wrestled. I mean, that's, you know, my size, that's the best, you know, obviously that's the best sport for you. You couldn't play basketball.
yeah.
So I did the 112 weight class. I went to sectionals 1 year. I was good enough, but not great, because I honestly didn't dedicate enough time to it. I was more worried about the horses, but I definitely was good, but not great, you know, and like I said, I just didn't dedicate enough time to it. But,
well, you see so many jockeys who started out a similar way, wrestling in school.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that also has to prepare you for controlling your weight.
Yeah, you know, and there's no way, obviously it does. So that's a great start off to kind of learn on what you got to do to make weight. The difference is like anything, wrestling, boxing, you can weigh in, and you know this, and you can go eat or drink whatever you want. You can go up to 118 after you weigh in, and you saw a lot of people do this. The difference, as you know, is being a jockey, it's every day. You know, you might ride eight races. You got to be 112, let's say, in the first race. You got to be the same 112 in the eighth race.
Right.
So you don't have that flexibility to go. It's such a more controlled, everyday thing. And I've watched 1,000 good riders where they just, they couldn't handle it anymore. It blew their minds. You know, that's when Seth Martinez maybe comes to mind most. He could ride with anybody, but the weight just mentally just beat him down after a while. And that's a hard part of the game that it takes some serious discipline. And I, you know, give every jockey out there, myself included, credit in that way. That discipline to do that day in and day out is different than the wrestling or boxing. Well, that taught me some good things. It's still not the same, you know.
Well, and you mentioned the mental aspect of controlling your weight, being so disciplined. And that was the toughest thing I found, was mentally More so than physically. Obviously, you're hungry all the time, but mentally, watching other people at a table in a restaurant and watching everyone enjoy their big dinners, and you can't do that, it's really, really tough mentally, more so than physically, I found.
Yes, yes, and I think that's where physically you learn to work out, your body learns to handle it, you learn what you need to do, but you're like, the day-to-day going to everyone else goes to a Sunday barbecue, you can't, yes, you can be there, but you can't do the same thing. And to learn that and to watch that's what it really catches up to people. Maybe, you know, first couple of years, not so bad, but do that by the time you hit 40, you know, which is the age I'm at, you know. Do that and see how much your metabolism slows down, how different things are. Now, I've learned to control it over 20 years, and Jesse, same way, and most guys, but that's definitely where that aspect comes into play, you know, where it's very tough.
So you're 5'1", you said, Joel. Do you struggle with it?
Even if I'm 5'1", I still got to struggle with it. I'm still working. I mean, I run 3 miles every day. And, you know, and I think things that every jockey's done, I'll mow my lawn in a sweatsuit. You know what I mean? We all have to struggle with it, but I don't have to do some of the things a lot of guys do. I can do it by eating healthy and working out. And we all know things that, you know, my brother has to do, you know, or 90% of guys have to do. There's things I didn't have to do that, thank God, but I am very, very dedicated to how I keep my body, you know? So.
Jockey Joel Campbell joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Joel, you mentioned Jesse immediately started riding out of high school. You, however, decided to go to college first. And what was your major?
So I just did a business management major, and obviously I just kind of always thought I'd go into, when I was done riding, you know, kind of soon be a trainer, work somewhere on, you know, or go into bloodstock. You know, I kind of always thought I was going to go into bloodstock agency route or be a trainer or, you know, be on some kind of management team at a racetrack. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but that's where I thought I was going to go at the age of 22, you know, 23. And then now I've gone on and got my master's at Midway in equine science. And I just think that's just something to add to my resume. But, you know, that's where I started from, and that was a platform.
I love it. And so, but eventually you realized that you wanted to ride.
Yes. Yeah. And I tell you how that happened. You know, I just finished high school and went to college, and I actually had a horse by the name of Lou Lincoln. And he was very good, like, doing the jumping circuit. And I actually got the horse from Chris Block, who's a very well-known trainer in Chicago. He had a lot of problems. You know, and they gave him to me, you know, and he obviously rehabilitated him off the track. Well, he turned out to be so good at what he was doing that I ended up kind of traveling around the country doing the A circuit with him while I was in college. And it probably, you know, delayed my career as a rider for a little bit because this horse is so good at doing that. So it wasn't like I wasn't doing horse stuff. It just was a different aspect. And then eventually we sold them, and I, you know, then it was time to start riding, and that's why. So.
And so tell us about the day that you rode your first race.
So, first couple races, and like I think anyone will tell you, it's just a blur. I think I won my fourth race at Hawthorne. It was the fourth race I rode at Hawthorne. It was a horse of my dad's. Name of the horse is River Road, and it was like December 18th. I think it happened so fast, I don't know if I remember a minute of it. I think most guys will tell you that about the first win. You know, I think the horse feared itself. You know, it was 10 degrees at Hawthorne, and the horse went on to win. But it was, you know, it was a pretty cool experience, that first one. You'll never forget that one, you know. But that was, yeah. So I think it was Hawthorne in 1999.
10 degrees. Yikes. Yeah. I hope they didn't.
It was one of those days. Yeah. Picture had snow in the background, you know, like one of those days at Hawthorne, you know, but that was it.
I hope the jocks didn't initiate you with cold water. I hope they didn't do that.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. Oh, my gosh. Well, how did you deal with that then? I've ridden Penn National at night in January, which is pretty cold, but Hawthorne, I think that's probably one of the coldest places out there. So how do you deal with riding in such brutal weather?
You know, and it's a funny thing. The difference between, I would say, now and like, you know, 1999, which is so weird. It's not that long ago, in 2018. The equipment has changed so much. I grant, like, Under Armour and Nike and all the stuff that's just so much better that sting, but yet keeps you warm. It's just so much better to ride with than what we used to do back then, you know, and it's, that to me has gotten so much better to ride. You know, I wear the scuba gloves in the winter, and I don't think it's that bad. You got to, like, a 5-minute post break, go right to gate. It's really doable nowadays, but back then it seemed to be so much worse, but maybe just gotten used to it over time, too. But
you can get used to that. I don't know.
You're right. But it's miserable. That last month at Hawthorne, it's miserable, but you get through it, you know.
And how long did you ride that circuit?
You know, it's been often. When I first got the bug, I went right out to the East Coast, right to Florida and Maryland, because that's where you had to have the bug back then, you know. And I eventually just got back to the Midwest and stayed throughout Iowa and Chicago and you know, stayed in that Midwest circuit. Used to go to Phoenix actually in the winter in my 20s, and then I started, no, that's not good enough, and started going down to Oakland and tip back to Chicago like most people do, or Iowa. And, you know, a lot of guys go to Indiana, Iowa, Oakland. Just stayed in that circuit for the last 10, 12 years, you know, in my career.
So you've traveled all over the place, Joe.
We all have.
We all
do.
Yeah,
I don't know who hasn't, right? But, yeah.
This is true. But tell us, how well did you have a successful apprenticeship there in Maryland and Florida? I spent some time in Maryland myself and really loved it there.
Yeah, you know, if I had to do it over again, which I would never take anything back, but the way, you know, I went out to Maryland, and that was when Edgar Prado was dominating, which, you know, was great to learn from him, and Ramon just came up then, and there were some really good riders there, and the way the circuits turned out, Maryland would be a great place to stay all year. I mean, at that time, the money wasn't like it is now. It was about the same as Chicago. You know, the lounge races were 30,000. Now they've gone up to the 40s, and it's a good circuit to stay all year, but What a beautiful place and horse country and tradition, you know, Maryland is. It reminds me a lot of the Chicago circuit. Like I said, if I was a young kid, I'm not sure that's not a good place to break off and start off, because there's a lot of opportunity coming out of there. But that is it's a great place to ride, you know.
Well, and especially with that bug, with time ticking, you want to ride as much as possible. There are so many racetracks
100%.
Around the area.
Yeah. I mean, you're surrounded. If you want to ride 7 days a week there now, you can. You know, back when I started, you know, 1999, I had the bug. It wasn't so much people weren't doing that thing. But I think now if you had the bug, like, you know, why wouldn't you want to be on the East Coast and be able to ride 6-7 days a week, whether it's night or day or, you know, whatever you want. There's just a ton of – the opportunity right now belongs in the East Coast. It really does, you know.
And did you have an agent call you from out there when you started riding to take
you home? Yeah. I know a couple people called me, and okay, it's time to go. You know, you knew you couldn't. The time was ticking in Chicago, and at that time, Chicago was about as good a jockey colony as you had. You had, you know, my brother, 2 years ago, and I think he was leading rider right off the bat. You had Mark Guidry, Carlos Silva, Randy Meyer, C.H. Marquez, Eddie Rosso. I mean, it was dirty tough, and these guys were all great riders. And, you know, the bug just wasn't used in Chicago, so you knew right away. You win a couple races, you had to go to the East Coast. You know, that was back then. You know, that was back then. Now, of course, it's changed quite a bit. But back then, you knew you had to get out of that circuit because you weren't going to ride much with that group of riders. So that's the way that was.
Yeah, you just mentioned some pretty impressive names there, and
yes.
And of course, you mentioned some great riders that were established in Maryland as well at the time. So did any of those greats, those legends, kind of take you under their wing and give you advice?
100%. And I'll start right with, and I forgot to mention Early Fires. So we've always had the same ballot, Mike Vinci, Early Fires, me, Jesse, Garrett Gomez, Randy Meyer. If you don't think those guys took us under, me and Jesse, they taught us so much before we even got started, let alone riding with them. I mean, this is really part of where my even get involved in the Jockeys Guild was. It went from Early Myers to Randy Meyer to Jerry LaSalle to me, you know, and that's how that tradition in Chicago got handed down. Those guys, they're all great guys, and they were proponents of the Jockeys Guild. And, you know, Joel, you got a college degree, you're intelligent, you need to be involved. You're willing to step up, say what's right. And that just got handed down, you know. I mean, I actually talked to Nancy LaSalle this morning. You know, it just got handed right down. So if you don't think Early Fires took me and Jesse under his wing, you know, you're crazy. He was the best, you know. And then also, you know, if you need advice, I knew Mark Guidry since I was, you know, 8 years old. I'd walk over to him and say, hey, what do you think? You know, or Randy Meyer was in our corner. I mean, these guys were great riders and great people. So it just followed through. That was the best thing about Chicago back then. It was just fun. Anyone will tell you when you walk in Chicago, Jack Shrimp is one of the best in the country. And it was true.
Was there anything in particular you sought them out for advice for, or anything you struggled early on with?
I don't know if struggle, because I grew up so much in the game, and I had Jesse to talk to you before I started riding. But I will tell, I don't know who said it, but at that time we had Sportsman's with a bull ring, right? They extended it. And one phrase I take with, I'll never forget, and I'll always even give that advice, was when you hit the turn, you're either in or out. And I think that's a way of life. You're kind of either 100% in or you're 100% out. And that was something I always took. Because I see it a lot even now where you got young riders and people getting run off with it and they put themselves in a bad spot and either turn. And that's a position you need to know where you're at in a racetrack. You're either in that spot or you're out of there. And that's something that they taught me right away. And Sportsman's being a bull ring, that was some real truth. You know, you either knew you were in that turn or you got out of there. So I think that was something they taught me right away. You know, I mean, you had Mark Guidry, who was professional at coming from behind. You had Randy Meyer, who was a professional at being on the lead. And just watching those guys day in and out, you know, it was easy to learn a lot. So,
yeah, Joel, the bull ring, that will teach you how to ride for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They switch that left lead and drop down. You better be in or out, like you said.
It's... You better be prepared, believe me. Yeah, that was one thing. Absolutely.
Oof. I'll never forget the first time I rode at Charlestown. Oh, my goodness.
There you go. Yeah, that experience. There you go.
It'll teach you. Definitely. And you mentioned a couple of riders and their riding styles. We only have about a minute here until break, but how would you describe your riding style?
You know, I was comfortable being anywhere, but I think if anyone say they'd say I patterned more off of, I was kind of the guy to sit back and make one move. I patterned myself probably more. If you compare it to, it'd probably be Mark Guidry. I mean, obviously, everyone's comfortable on the lead. But if you pattern the two, is save ground and make one run. You know, that was kind of where I was patterned at.
I always thought that was, I got so much more of an adrenaline rush from that flying late and passing everyone down the lane. But anyway, Joel, we got to take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight with jockey Joel Campbell. And Joel, before we went to break, you mentioned briefly your involvement with the Jockeys Guild, and I mentioned in the introduction you're the treasurer for the Jockeys Guild. So tell us what exactly you do and why the Jockeys Guild is important to the sport.
Well, I'll answer that two ways. What I exactly do is, you know, I'm just the treasurer, right? I just approve some, you know, financials and stuff like that. But that doesn't matter. As a whole, the Jockeys Guild means more than that, right? So and all the credit in the world goes to John Velasquez and G.R. Carter. I mean, John doesn't need to do this, and he steps up so many aspects to do what's right for everybody, not just, you know, John doesn't think about the guy on top of the list. He thinks about the guy in the bottom of the list, right? I mean, he just, and that's what the guild does. It's there to protect guys, you know. What we've done even in the last couple of years, we've set up health insurance for guys to be reimbursed by most tracks. We've set up our you know, financial, you know, stuff to give guys retirement funds in several locations. We've, you know, we're there for representation. We've had lawsuit with guys, you know, over whip rules and all kinds of stuff. And we're there for representation. And without that, you know, people don't realize in the 70s, you know, when my dad started riding, they had to go get their money from trainers. Do you think they always got paid? You know, they had to go run it down. You know, now because of the Jockeys Guild, guys get paid right out of the purse account. Guys get paid weekly. You know, guys have retirement funds and health insurance and representation. You know, we have $1 million on track at every track when guys get hurt because of what the Jockeys Guild has done. And I wish people knew that, you know, that's where we step up. And we've done what's right from, you know, Ruidoso Downs to Belmont, you know, and I think that's what needs to be said about the Jockeys Guild. So, you know, I'm a true believer in it, and I believe, you know, being a part of it means you're a part of something more than just about you. So,
yeah, that is so important and hard to imagine. Well, you mentioned your dad when he rode and had to go after trainers to get paid, and that'd be a difficult time. Oh, I can't imagine.
For sure. I mean, for sure. You know, they rode on contracts and didn't get paid. And I mean, what a different time and what a hard way to make a living. You know, you're already risking your body and your life in essential, let alone sometimes not even get paid for it. So if it weren't for the Jockeys Guild, I think that, you know, people would probably still be in that same situation. So I think it's important to be a part of that and realize what efforts guys have given and to be a part of one thing, you know.
So now I'm going to put you on the spot. I want to ask you a question. You mentioned how you've had lawsuits with the whip rules that are in place at certain locations and states. I want to pick your brain on that. What is your opinion on the whip rules? And you can only hit a horse in succession so many times, and I know different places have different rules, but what's your opinion on that?
So I'll give you a couple different opinions on this. As a jockey, I believe you should be allowed to have professional discretion. Now, I do think it's to a point. You know, I think in California, you can't eat three times in a row and give them a chance to respond. In Canada, it's twice in a row, give them a chance to respond. In an overall aspect, horse racing is missing one thing, and that's one, you know, jurisdiction where it's over everything. We should not have different rules in Indiana, California, you know, New York. That's ridiculous, you know, and that's where that really should start. Now, that being said, some of the things, if it comes down to the last 16th of a mile, you're going to tell me that a guy hits him three times or four times, you got to be able to do your job, you know. If a horse is backing out of the race, absolutely. We should, why are you hitting a horse, you know? You give him a chance to respond, switch sticks, whatever you want to call it. They don't respond, do what's best for the animal, because that's what I always will believe, do what's best for the animal. But if it comes down to the last 16th of a mile, let the guys ride the race they need to ride. Now, that being said, if you had one, you know, it's three times in a row all across the country, then it's three times in a row. And that way guys would know, they'll learn habits. They say, you know, it's three times in a row, we got to give them a chance to respond. If they don't, they don't. But you come back and explain to an owner you rode and say, well, I could only hit them twice in a row. Well, you got beat a nose. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough as a jockey. Where does that, you know, professional discretion come in? And that'd be my opinion about it. Either make one rule across the country, or say, look, the last 16th of a mile, you guys do what you need to do, whatever that may be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree, Joel. Like you said, so people can get used to it. It would be hard traveling from place to place, as you often do. And you have to remember, oh, guess what? In Woodbine, it's, you know, four times in a row. California, it's three times. And whatever it is, it would be hard to remember that, especially when you're down riding in a race. I know. Thankfully, that rule was never in place any of the racetracks I rode at. I think it would be really hard when you're down riding neck and neck to the wire and you have to stop and count. I don't know, it's not something I'm thinking about.
Absolutely. That's when instincts take over, not thinking. And I can't tell you how many times Jesse's gotten called into the steward's room. Hey, you went four times here. You hit him left-handed. You never gave him a chance to slide. I mean, and up there, you after your second infraction, they give you a day. And so it's a steep penalty. And in California, I don't mean to mention lawsuits, but, you know, recently, you know, and I'm not going to name guys, but we've had some problems with them because it's up to discretion of the stewards. You can't have anything up to – it either is or isn't. You can't have up to discretion of anybody because everyone's going to interpret the rule different. And that's where problems happen, you know.
Yeah, that's a tough rule if you ask me. But Joggy Joel Campbell joining us tonight on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Joel, we discussed briefly earlier all of your traveling from state to state, track to track. You rode in Maryland, you rode in Florida, you rode in Chicago, and didn't really discuss about your success in Arizona, however. You found great success there, actually. And I mentioned you won the Phoenix Gold Cup there with an Argentinian bred. And tell us, do you remember that race?
I tell you what, you just gave me knowledge. I had no clue. I didn't know it was an Argentina. But, I mean, we all win stakes all over. You know, I mean, I had a lot of success when I was there, you know, younger. Had the right agent, had the right timing. You know, it's like anything. You go to a track and you catch on fire and you get a lot of business. As far as the race, it was just another race. You know, to me, winning a 5,000, 500,000, 100,000, it's all the same. You know, when those gates open, it's all the same. You ride every race the same, you know, and that's once the gates open. So, do I remember it too much? No. I probably remember more, to me, winning a race for my dad or winning a race for a good friend on the track probably meant more to me than anything. You know, I won a lot of stakes in Iowa. You know, that was just race riding. To me, it was more joyful. You found one horse you found. I think I had one horse, Chisholm was his name. He went six in a row, you know. He won the Claiming Crown. Those are the kind of cool things that you remember a little bit more. I think you know, my brother rode a horse for me. Winning races for my dad was always funner than anything. And it could have been the cheapest race in the world, but I knew how hard they worked, you know. So that always meant more to me.
Well said, Joel. Did you ride against your brother frequently?
Yeah. And we were always separate. It seemed like we were always at different tracks. But obviously, when I first started riding, the periods we'd be in Chicago together, but then he started traveling to Canada and elsewhere. Yeah, absolutely. When we did, it was fun. It was different. Did we each know where each other was on the racetrack? You better believe we did. You know, and if I knew he was out of horse, you know, or he needed room, I might have given him a little more room. I wouldn't have given somebody else or vice versa. There was always that other aspect, though. Man, I mean, just a nightmare if something had happened to him in a race or vice versa. I think we talked about this, you know, that would always be a little scary. I do remember one we finished first, second at a race at Turfway. It was during the winter. We both out of Chicago, so we were riding it. I think we both happened to end up at Turfway. It was a long time ago. My grandpa was still alive. And I'll tell you what, we finished 1-2, and I think it was the proudest moment of his life. And this is when I come back to remembering things about racing. We all won stakes in this map. But he was so proud that his, you know, twin grandsons finished first and second. I think that was like, you know, that was in 2001. It was like a highlight of his life. And I think that meant more, you know, I think to him that was cooler than anything, and that to me and Jesse, that was cooler than anything. So that's the kind of stuff I remember about riding together. I also, we did once, we were at Arlington, and we finished, like, second to last and last, vice versa. And I think we were messing around. We were both 21 years old. I think he hit me over the back with the stick, and I hit him in the leg, you know, and we both got fined, like, $100 by the stewards for, you know, non-discretional, being a professional athlete kind of thing. And, you know, we both laugh about it, but, you know, I think that was kind of the fun stuff we got to do together that most people never experienced, you know. So
I love it. Did you find you were turning for home and you're dueling it out to the wire and you look over and you realize it's your brother? Did you find you were even more competitive with him?
Yeah, I think we had that happen a couple times. And for sure, I think we both knew where we were at in the race. And, of course, like I said, we always knew where each other was at when we rode together. I bet you the Ortiz brothers would tell you the same thing. They, you know, they might be first or fourth or last, and they know where each other's at in the race. You know, and I think we'd tell you the same thing. You know, it's just one of those things. After a while, the race slows down so much, you don't even need to look, and you know where every horse is. And we both knew where each other were. You know, so for sure.
When you mentioned We talked about injuries earlier, Joel. And did you have you suffered very many injuries during your career?
Yeah, I mean, like I saw, look, everyone's gotten beat up. I had a horse, the worst I ever got hurt. And I'll tell you what, this is what I was saying earlier, that everyone thinks about racing and riding. Every time you go out there, there's that risk. And the worst I ever got hurt, and I went down in some bad spills, something wrong, was, I was at Arlington. I think I just lost a buck. I was 21 years old. And I was just standing there, you know, the horse standing at the quarter pole with the pony. Just almost spooked him. He flipped right over. And I mean, just crushed me. And it broke my pelvis in like six spots and my tailbone. And you know, 6 months before I could ride again. I spent a month in the hospital, you know, 3 months in a wheelchair. And, you know, those kind of injuries, you know, like I said, that's why I say every time you go out there, there's that risk. And then, of course, you know, I had some spills. I broke a couple of vertebrae in my neck and, you know, pretty much every rib and ankles and all that good stuff. But that's just part of riding. You know, like I said earlier, you know what you're getting into. That's just part of the job. I never expected one to flip over like that. And I tell you what, that's still a great fear of mine. When one kind of goes up in the air like that, I still think about that moment. But
gosh, that's terrible. You've definitely had your fair share of injuries, Joel. And so that brings me next to the question. Did you ever question if you should continue riding after one of these injuries? Did you ever have any doubts, or were you just excited to get back?
You know what? It's so funny because when the worst injury I had, and it was probably young in my career, if that happened tomorrow, I might rethink it. And when that horse flipped over on me. But I was like, you know, I was 21. I just started riding. My son was just born. I couldn't wait to get back on a horse. I mean, I was in a wheelchair watching a race. You know, I couldn't wait to get back on a horse, you know? And I don't know if that's just the attitude. Maybe my aunt so installed us, you fall off, you get back on when we were little kids. I think that's just where I was at. Like, you know, that horse hurt me. I got to get back on, you know? So, you know, and I, like I said, if that happened to me tomorrow, man, I might rethink it. But at 21, I couldn't wait to get back on a horse. And the other injuries were, all right, 2 months off, let's get back to it, you know? So no, I guess not.
Well, and given that it is so dangerous, obviously the career span of a jockey is not usually very long, and for some more so than others, but you've prepared yourself for life.
Yes.
After riding. And
yes, I did.
tell us more about that.
Well, like I said earlier, I promised my grandpa I'd finish college, so I went back at night and finished, and then now recently I've gone and got my master's in equine science, and I just was always a firm believer you should always have a plan, and I think Jesse's the same way. You know, we can do this forever. You are an athlete. You know, you need to prepare for that next step, whether it's, you know, a lot of guys, sure, you know, go on to training, go on to be an agent, work somewhere on the backside. That's fine, but, you know, I do think you need to have another, you know, interest and love. You're never going to bring back that passion of riding races. That's the funnest job in the world, gate the wire, you know. You're never going to get that back. But I have fallen, you know, where I love real estate and love, you know, me and Jesse have flipped several homes. And I tell every guy, and I've brought it up at every meeting we've had at our annual meeting, guys, be prepared for after racing, whether that's, you know, whatever it is. You know, you want to be, you know, an electrician, go to school now while you can afford it and you've got time to do it. Go, you know, you want to do a home inspection. I know a couple guys have done that. I know several guys that have actually retired and been, you know, gone to the post office. Be prepared in some aspect because this isn't going to last forever, you know.
And so you went back to school and now you mentioned flipping homes with your brother, and that sounds like fun. So how did you get involved with that?
You know what? I think we're in our early 30s, and we both like, man, you know, we've had these discussions, don't get me wrong. We both know the danger and watching guys get hurt. And ultimately, watching guys who have had really good careers have nothing left after the end of their careers. I think that was more scary than anything. And you know, and we all know those stories. So we started, like, what are we going to do? What, you know, we're both, you know, only 30. What the heck are we going to do, you know? So we just started kind of doing research on real estate and met some people and you know, did one and did another one. And then, you know, slowly we could do it while we were riding and find the right house and flip it. And, you know, and then eventually I went out and got my real estate license and now work with other clients and stuff. But, you know, I think to us that was like, all right, it's a way to do something else that we like to do, you know, work outside, work with our hands, you know, that kind of thing. So
how many homes have you guys flipped together?
I think we're on 8. This is our 8th one.
And you mentioned you deal in real estate. what, throughout the winter mostly, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, absolutely. So I mean, I have my real estate license and prepared myself for that, you know, deal with other clients and buying and selling and that kind of thing. So
that probably keeps you pretty busy then. I looked at your website online and looks like you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So it's definitely become some, maybe not the passion of horses, because that'll never be fulfilled, but I definitely love it. You know, I definitely, you know, like it. So, like I said, it won't ever fulfill the passion of riding races on a day and every day, or, you know, but again, I can't do that forever. So,
well, give a shout out to yourself, Joel. If anyone's looking for real estate in the Chicago area, tell them how you look up your website.
Well, I appreciate that, but that's really nice. But I mean, it's at Baron Warner, Joel Campbell at Baron Warner. You can find, you know, all you got to do is look that up. You'll find it pretty quickly. But I appreciate that. That's nice of you.
Well, and you're still obviously, you know, riding, and you also took out your trainer's license.
Yeah, I recently, about a year ago, I took out, I said, you know, I obviously know I can't ride forever. I told you when I first started, I'm kind of in that player coach position now where I ride some, but I do have a couple horses now I train. Arlington was gracious enough to allow me to have dual licenses. They didn't have to do that. They made it a house rule for me, mainly because they know me since I was a little kid, and Courtney Milner and Jody Musilak and also me, Tony Petrillo, they went to the stewards and said, look, we've known Joel since he was a little kid. We're going to allow him to do this. Now, if I really wanted to get into it, they couldn't fight me too much on it, because in Illinois, you know, a driver and trainer can do the same thing as harness horses, and it's really the same. We have the same rules, right, and regulations. So they couldn't fight on me too much, but they didn't have to. They bent over backwards and said, we're going to allow Joel to do this. And I always appreciate that from them to those people at Arlington. So that was, you know, that was great. And I have a couple horses and train them, a couple clients, Ken and Jen Mineo, and they've stepped up and said, we're going to support you through this. And they've been great. So I'm looking forward to that part of my, you know, my next step in my career. But I'm still going to ride some. You know, there's no doubt about it. I'm going to ride some this year, and then we're going to try and move on with the training career. So
good. How do you feel better when you win a race riding, or when a horse runs well for you as a trainer? What feels better?
You know, it's so funny. It's a funny question, because I was thinking about this the other day, and it's like, it's so different. And I never would imagine that. So I watched my dad train since we were little kids. But when they're going to the gate and you're a rider, I feel like total peace, total control about everything that's going on. You know, and you're walking in that gate and you got that peaceful moment when they're walking in, and it's you have total control of what's going to happen. And as a trainer, I've only ridden a couple of my own, but I mainly have said, you know, I got to do this professionally and ask, you know, other guys to ride them on those days. And I feel I don't think I have a nervous bone in my body, but when they're walking through the gate as a trainer, I'm like, I can't do anything anymore. You know, I've done my job. Well, what can I do to help? You know, I can't help the situation. And to me, that's so weird. You know, so I rode for so long that I just, you're turning the reins literally over to somebody else. And I haven't gotten used to that yet. So that's kind of a funny question. So I was just thinking about that.
Do you give a lot of instructions in the paddock? Are you?
No, like absolutely not.
No.
You know what? That's one thing I will absolutely never do. And I tell you why. Because it was an old adage. And I write, you know, I'm going to ride good riders. I'm going to ride guys I know, they're friends. I know how good a riders they are. It's one of those adages, like, and I always heard this around the racetrack. If a rider's good enough, you don't have to give them instructions. And if they're not good enough, the instructions aren't going to matter. And I know who I'm about. Guys in Chicago are good riders. You know, guys in the Midwest, there's so many good riders. And I, you know, I ride Chrissy Meany. He's won 4,000 races. I'm not going to tell him how to ride a race. You know, the race is going to unfold how it does, and the horse is either going to, this is called horse racing, not jockey racing. And the horse is going to do his job or he's not. And I'm a firm believer in that. So, no, I pretty much say go ride them and be safe. And that's my qualification for them. So,
I love it. So, Joel, then, so tell us, with all this on your plate, you're riding, working real estate, you have your trainer's license. So what are your future plans, the immediate future, I should say, like, say, within the next year or so? What are your plans?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I want to ride my horses this year, but I also want to grow the stable. It's time to, you know, hit the 5 to 10 number and then grow from there. That is my immediate plan. The real estate's what's allowing me to do that on the side, you know, and the other things that I got going on. That's what's you know, that's what's funding me, you know, economically in order to do that. You know, I got to gain clients and you got to raise money because that's what this game's about now. Those are the things that are allowing me to do that. And then, you know, so that is my immediate goal. It is, you know, I always had a number, 42, 43, it's time to stop riding. So to me, it's like I got 2 years to grow this stable. So those are my immediate goals, you know.
Do you look to your father for a lot of advice with your training career?
You know, 100%. You know, obviously, when you grow up in it, and I've watched him all my life, I love the way he runs his stable, but I have my own ideas too. But when I need advice, especially on medication rules, you better believe I call him first because he's a walking handbook when it comes to medications and those kind of things and you know, overages and allowages, you know, what's allowed and what's not. So I absolutely turn for him on that. Now, when it comes to other things, you know, I want to do it my way, but I definitely look for advice from him because he's got 50 years of knowledge that sure, I've watched it my whole life, but he's got 50 years of being there with the knowledge. So you better believe I look for him advice. And there's other guys. Carlos Silva was my agent once, you know, and I rode with him for 15 years, and he was my agent, and then now he's training. You know, I definitely call him and ask him for advice. Dad Keller, I was the best man at his wedding in Iowa, and I'll call him for advice. You know, I'm not ashamed to do that. But I definitely know I want to do things my way, and I definitely know how I want them done. But there are things that come up, and you're like, you know what, I'd like to have another opinion about this. So I look for those guys, and first and foremost, my father, you know.
Joe, we only have a couple minutes left here. This hour is flying by. But now I want to ask you, what advice would you give to a young person who's wanting to become a rider?
Yeah, that's a hard question. It's a tough game. Be prepared for what you're going into. And then first, second, get some good advice. Get some good people around you. Because I've watched, riding's the easy part. I've watched too many young kids come up in the game and they kill it the first 2 years, 3 years. And then they get that dip down in business because that's just the natural flow of things. It goes up and down. That's part of riding. Save your money. Put money away. You know, invest the right way. So you don't need a new car every year. My advice wouldn't be on the racetrack. It'd be off the racetrack. Do you need to drive a new car every 2 years? You know what I mean? Like, there's where my advice come. You don't need 17 pair of jeans. You know, everyone's young. You know, be prepared. The tax guy is going to ask for money at the end of the year. And you're going to hit a tax rate that you're not prepared for, you know? So my advice would be off the track. Be prepared for those things, not on the track. That's the easy part. Riding is the easy part. Be professional on the racetrack, you know? Hold yourself to the right accountability, and then that'll go a long ways. Like I said, the riding is the easy part. That'd be my advice.
You mentioned your son, Joel. What would you say if your son comes up to you one day and says that he wants to be a jockey?
Well, thank God he's too big, right? He's already too big. So that's the good part. Because I can't imagine that conversation. I only remember with my parents. I think they hated it. You know, they hated it, but they were going to support us in every way possible. You know, like I said, my mom, I don't think she's missed a race in 20 years. You know, I mean, you know, she's on the boat with my dad, and she's taking her iPad with watching every race. It's like, when you get, you know, it's tough on families and parents, like we said earlier. So I think that'd be a very hard conversation. It's one I won't have to have with Chase, but it might be one my brother has to have with his daughter, Madison, because she's tiny, you know, and I think that's a tough conversation. I think it would be the advice I just gave. Know what you're getting into. Be prepared for what this is, and we don't want you to do this, but if you do, we'll support you in every way possible.
That's great. Now that you have a family, and you mentioned you're soon be focusing on growing your stable as a trainer. Do you plan on staying there in Chicago, or do you foresee you'll be traveling around a lot, or mostly stay focused there in Chicago?
Well, to me, Chicago's all-encompassing. I think that just ends up being the Midwest. Yes, in the summer, Arlington can't beat it. But our economics in Chicago, the racing's dipped so much, I think you better be prepared to travel a little, whether that's Indiana, Kentucky, Oakland. I think you're just forced to now. Unfortunately, the racing is just, like I said, it's just dipped so much in Chicago that you're now forced to travel. I mean, guys, Chris Block went to Tampa this year. I mean, Ravelli's down in Florida. Carlos Silva went. These guys, none of these guys ever left here before, and now they're kind of forced to, you know. So I think you better be prepared for that. But I think you need, like, that being said, home base is Chicago, right? So.
So what's your favorite racetrack you've been to?
It goes both. Keeneland's always going to be my favorite, kind of emotionally. Like, I just love it. You know, it's in the middle of horse country. It's the middle of Lexington. It's just the crowds they get and the way it is. You know, it's great. It's just a great place to be. I think I finished, like, 10th in the standings, so I had the bug there, you know, and then went out. And I'll never forget that. You know, just riding there on a day-in-day basis was great. But to me, Arlington still, it's might be the gold standard, and that's just because it's home. You know, I just, you know, I'm showing up to work every day, and that facility is a great place to be. So to me, I guess it'll always be Arlington is the gold standard, and that's just because it's home. But if I had to name another track, it'd be Keeneland.
So we got about 30 seconds left. So let's talk again about this PDJF fundraiser you're hosting there at Arlington, the 5K. Tell our listeners again how they can sign up.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a great way to end. So we're doing a PDJF 5K at the end of the races, June 16th, after the races, the day before Father's Day. It'll be at 6:30 at night. There'll be a beer, band, all the whole nine yards. Every penny of it will go towards the PDJF. And that being said, you can sign up in two ways. On It's Your Race, which is a pretty common for 5Ks and other running events. And you can just look up PDJF 5K. And then it'll also be on the Arlington website. And you can sign up there too.
Joel, thank you so much. We're out of time, but wishing you all the best. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Great conversation. Thank you.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Don't forget, next week we will be on Sirius 219 XM 201. I'm going to have a very special guest coming on the show next week, so don't miss out. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.